Raquel into the Nashville zone for Corey Perry. Perry coming wide, shoots, score! A power play goal, the Ducks strike first. Johansson for Met. Forsberg to the puck, beat Potten into it. Out in front, score! Philip Forsberg ties the game at one. Johansson with the puck. Ekholm fires. Rossi scores. Here's Kessler with two. And that's the Predators win game three.
Corey Perry, number 10, dropped his gloves. There was a leg cross check on Kessler in the corner. That brought everyone together. What a finish.
They play hard. They came with two guys. They did everything we expected them to do. It's just, you got to move the puck quick. You got a little better execution. And, you know, hey, Gibby played well for us and kept us in that game.
I mean, nobody panicked. We knew we played a good game. And we had a lot of chances, a lot of shots. And we knew we just had to play the same way. And they're going to go in sometime. And, it doesn't matter what happens. We just try to stay positive and just stay with it.
Roman Josi with the late game winner on the power play in crazy Nashville, Tennessee last night. They take a 2-1 lead over the Anaheim Ducks. That was Corey Perry right there, the only goal scorer for Anaheim, as you just heard. 2-1 Western Conference Final. The Eastern Conference Final resumes tonight in just a couple of hours. Melnick in the afternoon. Mitch Melnick, Mitch Gallo. Dave Trentadue is sitting in for Rod Francis, who shall return tomorrow. And as promised, on the bench in Ottawa is Pierre Maguire.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwoods. Now open in Laval on Saint-Marté and Daniel Johnson. Bring Dagwoods' unique taste to your neighborhood. Visit dagwoods.ca for franchising information.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
Only good memories, thinking back to when I first came to work here for Randy Sexton and Rod Brydon and Ray Shurl, and really helping to be part of a new franchise that was trying to get their feet underneath them. It was a really good time. So I'm just sitting on the bench thinking about those great memories.
Different arena, though, huh?
Well, we started in the old arena, but I was part of the coaching staff that coached the first ever game in this building. So I know this building really well from the times of coaching in it. And also, the World Junior in 09 was one of the more magical World Junior runs ever for Canada. And all of their games are right in this building. And I was thinking about that, too, and the great Pat Quinn and the New Year's Eve come from behind game and, you know, the greatness of John Tavares and that World Junior and the greatness of P.K. Subban and Ryan Ellis, two guys that are playing for Nashville. So thinking about a lot of stuff here this afternoon, all good memories.
Yeah, Guy Boucher was on that bench.
He was. He was the architect of the 1-3-1 power play, and that power play was Subban and Ellis and Tavares and Cody Hodson, who's now working as a skating instructor down in Nashville. I mean, I just think about it like it was yesterday. And Anthony Esposito, just everything.
I remember vividly, just as you're saying what you're saying, very early on after that place opened, you took me for a tour. You were working for the Senators. I was there prior to a game, and you introduced me to this longtime friend of yours who you said was on the fast track to a management position. His name was Ray Shiro.
Yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday. It wasn't. It was a long time ago.
We'll revisit where you are, but first, how about last night? What a scene in Nashville! That is great to see, their first ever Western Conference Final game, and to win it in dramatic fashion, as they did. What struck you about the overall game, the overall performance of both teams last night?
The energy in the building, and we talked about it being worth a lot for Nashville and really difficult for the visitors. Just look at the shot clock, 40-20 in favor of Nashville. I would love to see what each coaching staff had the chances for and chances against that. Not a ton of chances for Anaheim, a plethora of chances for Nashville in a lot of different ways, whether it's 5-on-5, whether it was on the power play, whether it was off the cycle, whether it was off the rush, whether it was off point shots. That's how, you know, I'm not big into the analytics, as you know, and most of the listeners know, but that's how, if I were using numbers, that's how I would quantify the game last night in terms of how Anaheim gave up chances and how Nashville generated chances. That would be the number that I would be looking at today on the off day.
Well, I was really impressed
by Nashville, obviously.
Let me stop you on that note. For those who haven't heard,
shots against tonight, I just have one tidbit that at one point it was 9-8 for us, and on one flurry that it went to 14. So I don't know who's counting the shots. But they dominated the shot clock tonight. I'm not going to say that they didn't, but I just, in reference, I didn't think they had five shots in net, and next thing you know, they've got 14, you know, and that's out of the sequence. It was one sequence, I think it was stopped one, they got one shot, and they, a little bit of a scramble, and all of a sudden they had four more shots added to the shot clock. So I don't know who's keeping them, but he better get a pair of glasses.
All right. Why would he spend 40 seconds? Like he said, they did dominate. But he felt the need to also get that out there. What was the point of that?
You're always trying to deflect. That's, you know, that's okay. That's not really a big deal. That's why I said how I would want to quantify it would be chances for and chances against and see what both staffs added at. Because everybody uses a different measuring stick for a chance for and chance against. You may see a chance as being from 8 feet in all alone from a bad angle, whereas I wouldn't have that as a good chance. Do you know what I'm saying, Mitch?
Sure.
Everybody quantifies it a different
way.
But that's how I would want it. The number that I would want to see from both staffs today, if it became available, would be how Nashville charted their chances for and chances against and how Anaheim charted their chances for and against, and to see how similar or dissimilar they were. That would be the one group of numbers that I'd want to see today, because I would tell you that I thought Nashville was the better team in that game last night.
And further to a point that you raised yesterday, I think most people who follow hockey regularly know how great Anaheim is in the faceoff circle, but once again it was Nashville. They were up around 56% in the draw. So again, Anaheim's chasing.
They're chasing, and what they're not getting, and I'm talking about Nashville now, they're not getting enough respect for what Mike Fisher's done, and I know we talked about it because he has no points. But Mike Fisher's been a very good faceoff player for them, going all the way back to the first round with Chicago. Ryan Johansson keeps getting better in faceoffs. Tyler Yarncroke is just so underappreciated. And whomever they play on the fourth line, and I'll use Vernon Fiddler as an example, they understand how to take faceoffs. They've got guys that are really veteran guys when it comes to that. So, I mean, again, there's a stress point that you have to put on certain parts of the game. And faceoffs is one of those. I know we talked about it yesterday, both about the National Series and about, obviously, the Ottawa-Pittsburgh Series. Faceoffs matter in the playoffs a ton.
Pierre McGuire in Ottawa prior to Game 3 tonight. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Dave Trentadue in for Rod Francis, and Mitch Gallo.
Pierre, on the shot clock stuff, I mean, John Gibson was so good in that game, and I'm just wondering, can a team rally behind a goaltender after a loss when he stands on his head but the team can't deliver the run support? Can next game they say, okay, you know, John really kept us in last game, now we're going to win one for him?
Oh, yeah, they can rally around it, but I don't think it'll be easy for them to win tomorrow in Nashville again. That building is electrifying, and whether you got a world-class goaltender or a guy that just is good enough to get you competitive, it's really hard for the visitors in that building. I didn't think Pekka was really that tested. The Corey Perry goal was from a bad angle, deflected in off a skate or a stick, depending on how you saw it. So, I no matter what John Gibson does, I think they're going to have to find a way to score more. Gibson could stand on his head again in Game 4, and they still could be going back home down 3-1.
Don't forget, they're missing Patrick Eaves. That's a big hole right now.
For Anaheim, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a huge hole for them, especially getting to the net. That if you drew up a chart of where Patrick Eaves has scored, whether it was in Dallas where he really had a lot of success or Anaheim after he got there, it's within 7 to 10 feet of the goal. It's not further than that. So he's one of those guys that's very good at getting playoff goals. I think that is a huge point in this whole thing. Very well delivered by you, Mitch. It's really an important part of what they're trying to accomplish, and it's not easy. It's not easy if you don't have a body like that that can score.
And further to drive home the point of what Pierre's talking about, Nashville at home, the whole experience, Nashville at home. They're six. They're unbeaten in these playoffs, and if you go back to last year, they're 10-0 in their last 10 playoff games in Nashville.
Yeah, and it's really not a very friendly place for the visitor. And I spent a lot of time there this spring, and I can tell you, it's just probably the most intimate environment for the home team of any of the buildings left in the playoffs. And I respect every single team that's still left. But it's a different formation in terms of how the building is built, the types of people that are going to the game. It's more of a college cheering crowd rather than a professional hockey cheering crowd. It's really, until you've been there, you really can't appreciate it. You really can't.
It's fun to play in front of these fans. So, you know, you always try to establish your home building, tough place to play. And I think we've been doing that. And even in a regular season, we like to play at home. And, you know, you don't want to have any regrets and you don't want to look back these home games as a missed chance. And we've been doing a really good job.
There's Pekka Rinne, whose save percentage for the playoffs is now back up to .950. Okay, let's get to Ottawa and Pittsburgh. You told us a couple of days ago that Trevor Daley was skating on his own. Is he going to play tonight?
As far as I know, he is, unless something happens in the warm-up, like what happened to Matt Murray before game one of the Columbus-Pittsburgh series, which is amazing when you think about it. Marc-Andre Fleury took over and never looked back. Unless something happens in the warm-up, Trevor Daley's in tonight.
Yeah, and how about Mark Streit?
I think that's more of a reach. We'll see how that plays out. I think a lot of it depends on whether they go with 11 forwards and 7D, or whether they go with, 6 and 12. We'll see how that plays out. The one name that could potentially be back in for Pittsburgh would be Tommy Kunackle if they go with the traditional 12 and 6.
All right. Further to what was a topic of discussion around the National Hockey League, especially in this country, over the last 48 hours?
I'm having fun. Yeah, it's not boring to anybody in here. We're playing a highly offensive Stanley Cup champion team. You have to shut them down, and you know people are going to have their input and their opinions on it, but we can argue that we're here right now and we're playing it, so it's working for us.
There's your man, Bobby Ryan, from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You look at the Ottawa Senators, again, further to what we were saying, I think everybody would agree they waited too long in Pittsburgh, right? They waited too long. Considering they have Bobby Ryan and Mark Stone and Hoffman, and they got some offensive players and Kyle Turris. And would you meet me halfway and say they probably waited too long in Pittsburgh?
I would absolutely meet you halfway. I think it's more than fair to say what you're saying.
So what
part
do they
the
do?
Problem is part of the problem though is that the other team gets paid to play too, and they had serious urgency. And they dominated the puck. They dominated the puck in the offensive zone. I keep hearing this chant about they made it easy on the Pittsburgh defense, especially considering Schultz wasn't in the lineup. Here's the deal. It's not easy to get after the opposition defense if the other team owns the puck. And they owned it in the faceoff circle, 62-49. They owned it. They owned the faceoff circle in game two, which they didn't in game one. And they owned the puck. I don't have the numbers. I don't have the scientific data to back it up, but I'm telling you, I did the game. They own the puck. The other team couldn't get the puck. And that you can't hit guys if you can't control the tempo of the game. It's really difficult. And most of the time, the puck was in the offensive zone. So how are you going to hit the defense if the puck's in your zone and you're defending rather than attacking? How are you going to do that?
And again, Ottawa, no shots until there was, about 5 minutes to go?
Yeah, some of the guys are reading some of the live tweets they got.
Yeah, sorry about that,
Peter. Yeah, some of the guys were reading some of the live tweets they got from people and all that kind of stuff and the reaction, and we find it entertaining as well. I mean, some of the stuff that comes back, the positive feedback, the negative feedback is all funny, but I said it before, listen, it's got us to where we are. It's the identity of our team, whether it's boring or not. At this point of the year, we're not trying to sell tickets. We're just trying to come out with wins, and you got to go with what works, and we've recognized that.
Okay, but on the selling tickets front, that might change by the time the puck drops in less than 3 hours, but Gallo?
Yeah, again, it's like the first round, and this was going back an hour or so, but there was reports that there's still tickets available for tonight's game.
That I don't know. I'm sitting in this building, which is a spectacular building, by the way. The vision to build this building, the way it's built, is phenomenal. It's just a beautiful building to watch a game in. I've watched a lot of games here. I've coached games here. I've broadcast a lot of games from here. It's a beautiful building. I don't know why it wouldn't be sold out. Again, if I were a fan of the Ottawa Senators or I lived in Ottawa and if I could afford it, I'd come to the game. I mean, I would, but I can't speak for why, you know, maybe it's not sold out. But I would tell you one thing. They got to be proud of this team. And they should be really proud of the vision of this coach. I know. Listen, I'm standing up for Guy Boucher. What's gone on? Some of the cheap shots going after him, I think it's pure jealousy, if you want to know the truth. Because I don't think a lot of people thought he'd be back in the league coaching. He's back in the league coaching, and he's thriving as a coach in the league. He's thriving. He's a tremendous coach. Tremendous coach.
Well, interesting, of course, that Peter Laviolette, and we all remember that game, right, between Tampa and Philadelphia, what Laviolette was trying to do.
Yep. Well, I was there. I broadcast the game.
It's Chris Pronger.
I mean, what's that?
Yeah, it was Chris Pronger, right? I mean, he was involved in that, and they just didn't move, right?
Yep. They were trying to shame Tampa into forechecking. And Tampa said, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to stand by our principles. Listen, I'm saying this out of respect. I respect Jacques Lemaire so much. So much. I coached against him. I watched him as a kid growing up as a player. I mean, I've been to events with him. I just respect the man as a coach amazingly. And some of his fingerprints are on this Ottawa situation. You may not like it, but it's a fact. He and Guy have had at least a 20-year relationship. They talk a lot about tactics. It's a lot like what I do with Scotty Bowman. I'm fortunate to be able to do that. And you can't know enough from those people. These are iconic, legendary people in the game. So what Ottawa's doing is not foreign to New Jersey Devil fans and their cup wins when Jacques was there and what happened after Jacques left and how Pat used to coach in Montreal, Pat Burns, and how he coached in Toronto and how he coached in Boston and how he coached in New Jersey, especially with the 0-3 Cup. Go watch the 0-3 Cup. The 0-3 Cup was unbelievable. It was old school. And so I have a lot of, for what he's going through and the mentors that he's had, I have a lot of respect for him.
That 0-3 Cup, Pat Burns coached the Devils past Mike Babcock and the Anaheim Ducks, finishing up with Pierre Maguire in Ottawa. Okay, so they're in the Eastern Conference Final, home game tonight against the defending Stanley Cup champs. What do you expect out of the gate?
No, this is where, if I were working with Guy, I would say we got to go after them early and test their guys in the back end. See what Daly's got in the tank. He hasn't played since Game 5 of the Washington Series. Go after Dumoulin, who played 26 minutes, which is a really high number for him. You got to challenge him, and it's a quick turnaround with travel. You got to challenge him early because he's going to be a key component on their back end. If I'm the Ottawa Senators staff, I'm pushing the pace early, get my fans engaged, and go after Pittsburgh's defense and test them. Now, if Pittsburgh can handle it, then you got to kind of revert back to what your ideology is. You got to revert back to what's made you good. But if they don't handle it, you're in a real good spot, and you can keep building momentum in the series.
And if you're wondering about a Kessel-Malkin take two, tonight here is the Penguins superstar center.
Two periods, 0-0, you know, we understand when he scored, and we're not happy, like, a couple shifts, and it's fine. I mean, it's like sometimes, like, We can't talk each other, you know, a little bit, but after game, we're fine.
We can't talk to each other, but afterwards, we're fine. That's good.
Yeah, no, when I come on your air, I don't make stuff up. I'm just telling you, I'm there. And this has been going on for a long time. That's why I was really surprised at the tone that this took after game two. Because it happened in game one. It happened in game one. It happened during the Washington series. It happened during, you know, their early year series with Columbus. It happened. Those guys are emotional. And I'm telling you, when Hornquist is involved, it's amazingly intense. And Rick Tocchet, I said it today on another radio show, he should get a job at the UN as a peacekeeper. He's unbelievable down there. He's really good with those guys. But it's emotional. It happens. They're not the only bench in the league that has that. I can tell you Chicago has some of that going on with some of their players. Los Angeles has had it go on with some of their players. I mean, I can go around the league. It goes on in Anaheim.
I remember watching a game a couple of years ago. The Canadiens were out west, and Matthew Darche and P.K. Subban were kind of going at it. And it was mostly one way, Matthew Darche leaving the ice. Matthew Darche adores P.K. Subban. But a lot of people tried to blow that up and point and go, aha, there's another example of this guy not being good with his teammates. It was in the heat of the moment.
It's okay. I understand. But you've been in sports for a long time. I've been fortunate enough to been in sports my whole adult life. It's an intense environment. It happens. Stuff's going to happen. Do you have fights at home sometimes over the dinner table? Yeah, you do. But you still love the people that you fight with. I mean, that's just how it works out. It's okay. Emotion's not a bad thing.
Well, there was a lot of emotion at the end of the last game between Pittsburgh and Ottawa. And I know we spoke yesterday about how well Dion Phaneuf is playing. But, Pierre, do you think for Pittsburgh it's something they talk about? The fact that Dion Phaneuf is leaving position to really hammer some of those guys in the middle of the ice?
He can do that because of the system that they play. That's the point we've made up or showed video-wise Mitch Gallo during game two. The insulation that they have down the middle of the ice, they play a center lock. And sometimes it's a 1-3-1, sometimes it's a 1-4 delay, but they change up their coverages in the neutral zone, and we showed that as well on our broadcast. And that's why the defense on the left side in particular for Ottawa, whether it's Mathot or whether it's Phaneuf, those are the two more aggressive guys. They have almost a license to be able to step up and deliver huge hits because of the way they insulate them with forwards.
Final one, Pierre. Pierre Dorion in Ottawa, David Poile in Nashville, Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, the finalists for the General Manager of the Year. It's about time that award got named the Sam Pollock Award. Would you not agree?
Totally agree. Totally agree. That is a brilliant suggestion by you. Hopefully the minds that come up with these awards will definitely see that and understand that. I was fortunate enough to be asked to be on that committee, and I can cheer on the voting committee for that award. Here's the deal how that goes down, and I think it's one of the smart things the league has done. They've created this committee, and what they do is they allow you to include the first two rounds of the playoffs. So it's the entire season and the first two rounds of the playoffs when you're evaluating the work of the managers. I think it's really smart because you can see the team building aspect that goes into it. And that's what managers are supposed to do. They're supposed to build teams, whether it's through the coaching hirings, whether it's through some of the trades during the season or the call-ups or the drafting or the trade deadline acquisitions. They're all different things that go into team building. And I think all three of the men that are being acknowledged as nominees have really earned it. Really, really earned it, especially Pierre Dorion Jr. does not get enough respect for what he's done here in Ottawa, because before he got the manager's job, he was a big part of their scouting vision, and a lot of the players that are here that are turning out, J.G. Pazdur being one of them, they were drafted by Pierre Dorion Jr. and his scouting staff.
Pierre McGuire in Ottawa, 8 o'clock start, Game 3, Penguins and Senators. Again, I wish we could watch you guys, but we'll at least talk to you about it tomorrow at 5:05. Thanks, Pierre.
Well, thanks a lot, Mitch. I appreciate it. Have a great night, everybody.